fight from within. You're about to go behind enemy lines.
Roger, 3-2. Goliath copies all. Go ahead.
Target is surrounded by multiple firms entering what appears to be a residential area. Requesting permission to engage you.
From the People's Republic of New York City, you're now going behind enemy lines with Gene Berardelli and Russ Gallo.
And you are now behind enemy lines. Hey there, how you doing, America? Gene Berardelli here with you. So glad you could be with us this week. Whether you're listening at www.behindenemylinesradio.us, or if you're checking us out on AM radio, FM radio, the internet radio, wherever you may be tuned in, we're glad that you are. Or if we're traveling along with you as a podcast, thanks for taking us along for the ride. Got a great show this week. Got a lot going on here in Behind Enemy Lines land. We're going to have a great guest this week. Keeping in the vein with Buffoon of the Year, what we did last week. By the way, the response to Buffoon of the Year this year, absolutely overwhelming. As we sit here recording this show, we're over 500 cumulative votes and counting, which is just blew away last year and blew away previous years. Last year was the biggest year ever. This year, we're on track to be even bigger because of all of you. So thank you so much for participating. Keep doing it throughout the month, as we crown this year's Buffoon of the Year. But we're going to be talking with Gavin Clarkson, who has a funny story to tell about getting a marriage license and being told that where he's from is not actually part of the United States. You'll hear about that story. But before we get to that, and listen, we're going to run the gamut. We're going to talk about the latest filings from the Mueller investigation and what they may or may not mean and what some of the experts are saying about that. But of course, the big news this week, and the week's barely started as we record this, is the confrontation. And of course, when I say the confrontation, it's capital T, capital C, that happened in the White House this week between President Donald Trump, presumably the incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. If this is what 2019 is going to look like, folks, man, oh man, are we in for a ride and a half. For those of you who may have missed it or have been ignoring the news because of the holidays, and if you are, why are you listening to the show? Get back to decorating. We saw a tete-a-tete between those three giants of Washington right now trying to avoid and negotiate the government shutdown from happening. Trying to prevent a government shutdown. Trying to get another continuing resolution to keep the government funded for a certain amount of time until they kick the can down the road even further, and then they have to come back and meet again and kick the can down the road even further. You know how it is in Washington. Nobody actually gets anything done until it's absolutely, totally, 100% completely necessary to get it done. Talk about procrastination. My goodness, but that's a whole other show. But in looking at this whole spectacle, and it was a spectacle this week, folks, 15 minutes in front of the press of arguing, bickering, who can top whom, who is more macho than the other, and all the parts you would see from a knockdown, drag-out junior high school argument, which is only the best way I can describe it. We learned a lot of things about what 2019 and probably 2020 are going to look like in our political world. And it doesn't look too pretty, folks. It looks like there's going to be some gridlock. It looks like we're going to be butting heads between parties. And it looks like everyone's going to be digging in their heels to gear up for the next big election, which, of course, will be the greatest and biggest and most important election in our history, unlike the last one, which was told to be the greatest and most important election in our history. You think that was big? That's small potatoes compared to what's coming up, right? Seems like we're always told that. But this one might live up to the hype if we're now 2 years out from that, and they're already starting. Let's get down to the meat and potatoes of it. Basically, President Trump wants to negotiate funding for the border wall and for border security in exchange for keeping the government open and funding another continuing resolution. The Democrats, on the other hand, do not want to give up anything for this border wall, or as Nancy Pelosi has reportedly called it in private meetings, quote, this wall thing, because that will give Donald Trump a win. She can't be seen as weak with her Democratic caucus, especially because she wants to be the speaker. And there's been a little contention, as we've covered in other shows, as to whether or not that will actually happen or not. It looks like it's going to happen. It looks like, as predicted, the Democrats are going to get their ducks in rows, and they're going to vote down the line, because she who controls the campaign fundraising ability controls the Democratic Party. But here we have Trump and Schumer and Pelosi all jabbing at each other in public. Trump making his points about border security. Pelosi trying to challenge Trump and step up to him. Schumer trying to be the wiser elder statesman and telling Trump how wrong he is and how he's right. And it really was political theater of probably the most absurd kind. Trump comes out, though, in a good way, but it's definitely a split decision, folks, in my opinion. And you can send your cards and letters to, Behind Enemy Lines at www.behindenemylinesradio.us for me saying that. But this is a mixed bag. Positive for Donald Trump, he comes out strong on border security. As always, it's a main issue for his base. He comes out swinging on that, and he shows commitment to keeping that promise of building a wall and making sure that our borders are secure, especially in light of the recent news and events of the migrant caravan that was, quote-unquote, invading our border. So he comes out strong there. He also gets points for sticking up for, quote-unquote, the everyman. I'm going to be using quote-unquote a lot in this segment, folks, so get used to it. Trump comes off, as he always comes off, a man of and from the people. He may be a billionaire with a silver spoon born in his mouth and has had, wealth and luxury all his life and opulence, as we've seen. But he comes off as the everyman in the way that he communicates himself and presents himself. And that plays right into his base. So he is seen now as the scrappy, inarticulate defender of the public interest in opposition to the superiors, as I'm going to call them, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They believe that they are above the fray. They believe that they are above this commonality of meetings in public with the press, and must we do this in public, and, they don't want to air their dirty laundry in front of the press. Must we do this here, Mr. President? Let's go and have a private meeting. When Donald Trump is saying, this is called transparency, and this is what we have to do in government, and all the stuff that your conservative base and your populist base want to hear. And to them, Trump comes off as a hero. To the supporters of the superiors, Schumer and Pelosi, he comes off as ignorant, uncouth, inarticulate, dumb, boastful, all the things that you hear about Donald Trump that riles up his base. Because they feel superior to Donald Trump. He doesn't have the sufficient breeding to be president of the United States. He doesn't have the sufficient temperament to be president of the United States. Look at him in comparison to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They are clearly smarter. They are clearly much more well-mannered. They have real class. It's kind of like what Macy Hirono was saying, Buffoon of the Year nominee, by the way. Let's see if she gets out of the second round. Cheap plug. But remember what Macy Hirono says, that people sometimes are turned off by the Democrats because we're just smarter than everybody else. We read the New York Times. We're up on current events. We believe in the UN and globalization, and America is bad for wanting to be exceptional and superior to the rest of the world. That's how they come off. And guarantee you, the reason why this is a mixed bag, part of the reason anyway, is because the press ate that up. They loved seeing that dichotomy of the quote-unquote adult versus Trump. But also, They're standing up to the quote-unquote bully. The bully-in-chief, Donald Trump. They're saying, no, Mr. President, we will not do this. We will not fund your wall. You'll only get $1.6 billion towards the wall in the deal that we're offering. You're not going to get the full $5 million. So in that sense, they are playing to their base, and they are taking up a strong position within their party, and it's a makeover in the sense that this is a face-to-face with Donald Trump, and they're standing up to him, and they're wagging their finger in his face and chastising him in public instead of doing it at a press conference that's well-orchestrated and everything. Now, again, the orchestration of this meeting favored Donald Trump. Donald Trump is used to being off the cuff. He's used to talking contemporaneously. He's used to the press scrutiny. If you saw some of the photos that came out of this event, folks, the uncomfortable feeling that Chuck Schumer had in sitting in this meeting that was done publicly for 15 minutes in the White House, with his head down and slouching forward and all that. This is Chuck Schumer. This is Chuck Schumer, who lives for the camera, who basically came up with the Sunday morning press conference so that he could expound on whatever issue he wanted to without interruption that helped make him into a national figure. He's used to press manipulation. He's not used to the free-for-all. He's used to well-orchestrated, well-organized, talking point memo included press conferences that are very orderly and that have him as the focus. Here, it was a free-for-all. He was not the focus. He was not prepared to talk in front of the press for 15 minutes. He was not his normal polished self. He was not the Chuck Schumer that you used to seeing on Sunday mornings. He was rattled. Point Trump. Now, Pelosi and Schumer scored their points as well. Let's not kid ourselves. Pelosi and Schumer scored points in getting Donald Trump to, quote, take the mantle of a government shutdown over border wall, border security, illegal immigration. They basically said this is going to be a Trump shutdown if it happens. And Trump embraced that. He said he'd own it. But if history is any guide, folks, the group that is responsible for a government shutdown in recent years has been the group that has taken the hit. When Ted Cruz shut down the government, Republicans took the hit. Conservatives took the hit. When there was the quote-unquote Schumer shutdown, Democrats took the hit. By having Donald Trump embrace this shutdown as his own and that he's willing to do it, it may be some gamesmanship by Donald Trump, but he has now had this labeled, and it will forever be labeled if it happens, as the Trump shutdown. That's going to stick from this meeting. What also is going to stick from this meeting is a further partisan divide. We obviously saw that coming in, but it's going to be even further now, mainly because of the personalities and the way this press conference, if you want to call it that, occurred. Everyone's going to get something out of this meeting that they can hang their hat on and say, look at me, I done good. Trump, we discussed already. Pelosi, we discussed already. Schumer, he's along for the ride right now. He's losing ground in the Senate next year. So he needs to hold on to that little bit of edge he has for the 60-vote supermajority that's necessary for bills of this nature. And he needs to keep those people in line. And it's probably going to be easier for him to keep those people in line now that many of them who were vulnerable no longer have an election coming up. You'll see, Manchin, and you'll see a lot of Democrats that were on the bubble. You'll see them really make a left turn this year because they don't have to worry about an election for a very long time. Trump's got to get elected before they do in a lot of cases. Or they're going to be trying to ride this wave that was started across the country for House members, and see if they can hitch a ride on that. Lots of moving parts, as always, in this. No real winner, and no real solution either. As we see, there were some proposals made that the Trump administration is saying that they're taking under advisement. At least that's a positive thing. And it remains to be seen whether this meeting will actually have the bite And the last thing result that everybody wants to see, which is nobody wants to see a government shutdown. I mean, some of you out there may want to see a government shutdown, but I don't think I want to. I want to see the Trump agenda move forward. I want to see President Trump be able to get some things done and to prove his critics wrong. I think he'll be able to work on some issues. Criminal justice reform is back on the agenda now. We may see Trump become more of a centrist in the hopes that he can drag the Democrats to the center and eliminate the influences of the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world and the crazies on that side of the aisle. It all remains to be seen, folks, but we got a lot to dig up here. But before we do all that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're not going to go back into some heavy news. We're going to save that for the end. The Mueller brief that was dropped last week late, we're going to get into that. And we're going to try to do a deep dive into it. And we'll talk about why Mueller is really, I don't want to say abusing power, but he is really towing that line really closely. But first, when we come back, Gavin Clarkson talking about his adventures in getting married with a buffoon administration trying to paper push the wrong way. Gene Berardelli, Behind Enemy Lines, will be back right after these brief words.
Behind Enemy Lines.
Open calendar. What's my schedule looking like?
Next Thursday, you will be caught in an emergency flash flood between Park and First Street.
What? No, that doesn't work. I'm busy then. Decline. Decline.
Floods don't exactly work around your schedule. Disasters don't plan ahead. But you can. It starts with talking to your loved ones about making an emergency plan. So don't wait. Communicate. Get started today at ready.gov/plan. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
If you're a longtime listener of the show, or maybe this is your first time listening, you can probably tell that me and the gang here, we like to have our share of fun, whether it's on or off the air. We talk about two-drink minimum radio and no medication Wednesdays or whatever day it may be. That's why when we found the people at Less Government More Fun, we knew it was a match made in heaven with this show. Folks, we live in a time where government is out of hand. Our founding fathers did not intend government to be all-consuming in all parts of our lives. That's why we are telling you to go to lessgovmorefun.com. Check out the website. Check out the swag. What the people want is less government, more fun. Pass it on. Make it happen. Behind Enemy Lines Radio is all about being right. No, seriously, it is. If you ever listen to Russ Gallo or me go back and forth on some issue, we always want to make sure that we remember who said what and when we said it. That's why we go to GoOnRecord.com. It's a brand new social media website. Challenge people on what they believe, whether it's in politics, sports, entertainment, finance, whatever. There's a category for you at GoOnRecord.com. Check it out right now. Tell us, what do you stand for? It's time for you to go on record.
Behind Enemy Lines.
Gene Berardelli, back behind enemy lines. You know, right now we got a Buffoon of the Year competition going on. It's in its first week. By now you'll know who's made it to the second round of four rounds. And we'll go all the way until we have one person standing for Buffoon of the Year. But there was a lot of buffoonery that missed the cut, unfortunately for some, that we just couldn't get to discuss because of the timing of everything. And one of those stories is about a marriage license of all things, and we have a friend of the show on the line right now, Gavin Clarkson, who I'm just going to say, sir, we're going to verify, you are a citizen of the United States, right?
I am both an American citizen, and I'm also an enrolled tribal member, a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma.
And the reason why we're asking that is because Gavin encountered some resistance from some paper pushers in Washington, D.C., when he went to apply for a marriage license. Why don't you tell everybody about your story?
Well, my fiance wanted to get married on her birthday, and I'm an absent-minded professor, and I'm a guy, and so I jumped at the chance to only have to have one day to remember, to have my wife's birthday also be our anniversary. So we walked in on November 20th, which is her birthday, to get our marriage license, and we had our paperwork filled out. We were all set to go. It should have been a very straightforward process. And we handed the clerk my wife's DC driver's license. And that was fine. Handed the paperwork and then handed her my New Mexico driver's license. And she paused. And she looked at me and she said, "Excuse me, sir, I'll be back." And then she goes to the back.
So that had to strike you as pretty weird. Now, just to set the scene as well, this is now currently your wife is, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. No. So this is my fiance, right, and we're going to get married that day.
So there is a happy ending coming. So, that's good to know.
Yes, and so we're gonna get because the plan, you know, we're there the morning of the 20th, and we're trying to get married on the 20th, and you know we got the priest all lined up, everything's set to go. We just need the marriage license, and so we but then she goes to the back, and I thought, oh, maybe she's gonna go make photocopies or something like that. Then she comes back, and she looks at me and she says, "Dr. Clarkson, I'm sorry, but my supervisor tells me we cannot accept international driver's licenses. Do you happen to have your New Mexico passport handy?"
Wait a minute. Now, I'm not exactly a geographical scholar, but I do know that New Mexico and Mexico are two totally different places. You mean to tell me that some paper pusher in D.C. basically said you're not American?
Well, it happens more often than you might think, and it's not just limited to D.C.
Wait a minute. Hold on here a second. It happened. How often did you do some research on this? That it happens often?
Oh yes. No. The New Mexico magazine, published by the Department of Tourism, actually runs a humor column every month about one of our 50 is missing. In fact, it happens so often it was part of several Simpsons episodes.
Oh my goodness! But you know what? That's a Simpsons episode. This is real life.
So this is real life, and there are real consequences if this bureaucrat doesn't give me that marriage license. And so I'm preparing myself now that we're gonna have a bit of a challenge because I'm not leaving without that marriage license. So I try to explain to the clerk, no, it's a state. It's that vacant lot between Texas and Arizona, and we speak English there. And then she looks at me and says, "Dr. Clarkson, your English is excellent. That's not the problem." And at this point, my fiance, who is herself an immigrant, she became a citizen 15 years ago, but she still has a bit of an accent. She's like, "What aren't you talking about? I'm the immigrant here." And so at this point, we say, "Look, we're going to have to talk to the supervisor." So then the clerk goes back. About 10 minutes later, she comes back, and she's like, my supervisor verified, we looked it up, and my supervisor verified that New Mexico is a state, so your driver's license will be just fine.
Did the supervisor, please tell me the supervisor came out. Please tell me.
No, I have a feeling the supervisor wanted her anonymity preserved.
Duh. I mean, come on.
At that point, it only cost us 20 minutes. And at that point, after that, the clerk was very apologetic. She was so sweet. And, she was very helpful at that point. And so it was all fine. And then later, after the ceremony, we went back and I turned in the paperwork. And I just asked, out of curiosity, would it have been easier or quicker if I had shown you my tribal ID instead? And they all hung their heads and said, "Yes, it would have."
No.
But in the end, all it did was cost us an extra 20 minutes. So it wasn't that huge of a problem. But it was a funny story, because I've heard all these people talk about their one of our 50 is missing stories. And I just have my own one at the D.C. Marriage Bureau. So I posted a little note about it on Facebook, and everybody laughed and ha 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 ha. Well, one of the people that read it is a reporter for the local newspaper, so she wrote a story, and then that story got printed in the Las Cruces Sun News, and then that got picked up by USA Today, and then all of a sudden it exploded into a nationwide viral phenomenon because I started getting calls from the various different television stations in New Mexico and also in D.C. And they ran their stories, and then it turned into the local news, last 30-second kicker story, the strange things or can you believe this type thing. And it just kept going and going. And it actually has now made it onto four continents. Part of Marina's family is from Italy, and her Italian relatives called up and said, "Hey, we saw it on Italian television in Italian."
That's amazing.
And Marina and we both speak English and Spanish, so we did stories for Univision and Telemundo. And I actually got stopped yesterday at the Las Vegas monorail, a guy asking me in Spanish if I was the New Mexico passport guy. So it's absolutely exploded. Our wedding video has now been viewed more than 35,000 times in less than a week.
Oh, and your wife's got to be thrilled about that part. I mean, all's well that ends well on that front. 20 minutes of anxiety turns into, you know, everyone knowing your marriage and seeing how beautiful it was. But not only that, you are now guaranteed to never forget either her birthday or your anniversary.
Oh, yes. November 20th, you know, is a day that will live in both marital bliss as well as comedic bliss.
But although, on the other hand, now you can just feign forgetfulness and be like, "Oh, did we really get married? Because I don't know if my ID really qualified."
Yeah, I don't think that would go over so well.
Oh,
so
no.
I think I'll stick with remembering.
This is why I'm single. This is why I'm single, because I would go more for the gag than I would go for the whatever. But yeah. That's just me. Now, obviously, all's one of the ends well. Everybody got married and everything. But for those 20 minutes, describe the horror in your wife's face when all this was going on and this bureaucrat was holding up your wedded bliss.
Well, it was more just in incredulity. I mean, she just could not believe that this person, I mean, she learned that New Mexico was a state when she was going to school in Argentina. She, you know, and all the couples behind us are just laughing uproariously. So, you know, it's like the first time it happened, you know, when we're having the discussion, you know, it's like she's really anxious. And then the person goes back and says, "We're talking to the supervisor." Fortunately, you know, we figured, look, we do know, in fact, that New Mexico is a state. So, you know, if we have to get serious, and I mean, I'm prepared to go all lawyer on this. But fortunately, the supervisor did a Google search and verified that New Mexico was a state. And, you know, and so it ended up, I think she was not as panicked because, you know, we almost were expecting somebody to come out, you know, from Punk saying, "Ha-ha, gag's on you with a video camera," but it was real. And the funny part is, people thought originally this was a story for The Onion, except that when the Las Cruces reporter, they went out and contacted the D.C. Marriage Bureau to say, "Did this really happen?" And the D.C. The D.C. court's PR person sent it back a sort of a snarky, passive-aggressive apology. But nonetheless verified that, yes, in fact, this had happened.
It's you can't make this up.
No, that's the whole point, is it really wasn't an Onion story. It was a real story.
Well, thankfully, political buffoonery did not cost you anything as far as, you know, your marriage. And I hope you have a happy marriage. And, you know, I hope your wife will always remember this day as the day that the government almost got in between the two of you. And we wish you the best of luck. And listen, even though you didn't qualify this year for Buffoon of the Year, because of timing, because we closed off nominations before your incident happened, I can virtually guarantee you that they'll at least get nominated to possibly be a finalist next year. Gavin Clarkson, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us your great story. And good luck to you in the future with your wife. And God bless. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, as a political candidate, you know, I people were telling me, we actually had our Republican Party meeting today statewide, and everybody was pointing out that my name ID statewide is at 95%.
So wow!
It's gonna be a blessing in disguise. I'm fairly certain.
All right. Well, make sure that part of your platform is promoting that New Mexico actually is a state to the rest of the
Absolutely.
Union.
Absolutely. For all your listeners, come visit New Mexico. No passport required.
All right, Gavin. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Time for a little music. We call this, "What the Fuck Is Maxine Waters Saying?"
To be clear, you believe it would have been better to keep in place an FBI director who you said had no credibility to oversee this investigation than to find someone who you think would be a better choice?
No. But I believe the president thought that. Don't forget, you're talking about what some Democrats said, what I said, but don't forget, he was the president. The president supported him. He had confidence in him. It was within his power. And
but you said he had no credibility, so it would seem to make sense that he should get rid of him.
No. Under investigation, this president basically has interfered with an investigation where he may be implicated. That's outrageous, and that's why we're having so much of a conversation about it today.
The bottom line is that you think an FBI director without credibility would have been best served in this position
to try to pursue this investigation. I think if the president had fired him when he first came in, he would not have to be in a position now where he's trying to make up a story.
Understood.
About why. It does not meet the smell test.
Yeah, something smells all right.
Understood. So if Hillary Clinton had won the White House, would you have recommended that she fire FBI Director James Comey?
Well, let me tell you something. If she had won the White House, I believe that given what he did to her and what he tried to do, she should have fired him.
So she should have fired him, but he shouldn't have fired him. This is why I'm confused.
No, you're not confused.
Yes, I am.
Behind enemy lines.
Gene Berardelli, back behind enemy lines. I want to thank Gavin Clarkson for coming on the show. What a great interview that was. A lot of fun talking about the silliness that led up to his eventual nuptials. Congratulations on getting married. And finally proving that New Mexico is a state. Good on you. And listen, now's as good a time as any to do some plugs and get some of the good and welfare out of the way. Thanks for listening to Behind Enemy Lines Radio. I'm Gene Berardelli. Russ Gallo isn't here, but we got some good news to talk about him later on as well. Check us out at www.behindenemylinesradio.us. Check us out on the Facebooks and the Twitters at BEL_radio. But if you miss any part of the show when we do our broadcast, you can always catch us on our rebroadcast outlets, including WJHC Talk 107.5 FM in Jasper, Florida, WDDQ 92.1 FM in Adel, Georgia, WLBB 1330 News Talk AM, all a part of the Talk America Radio Network, powered by ICRN, the Internet's conservative radio network. You can also catch us on KLRN Radio, Lone Star Talk Radio and Sackheads Media, Lanterns Radio at lanterns.buzz, and Eye to Eye Talk Radio, another one of our great affiliates that's up and coming, and our newest affiliate, Mojo50. Check them out at mojo50.com. One of these days I'm going to get the Brooklyn out of my mouth and be able to talk properly. Mojo50.com. Doc Thompson and Ron Phillips and Matt Locke and all our friends over there are doing such a great job. But if you miss any of the rebroadcasts, don't worry. It's cool. We got you covered. We're also available as a podcast pretty much everywhere, but including Stitcher, Spreaker, Podbay, Player FM, TuneIn, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Auto Radio, iTunes, and of course the mighty, mighty iHeartRadio Network. And of course, it's December, which means it's Buffoon of the Year time. I've mentioned it a couple times on the show already. I'm going to keep on mentioning it till you vote. One round a week until we crown a new buffoon on our first show of 2019. Check it out. And also, check out the official now Behind Enemy Lines store we just added. We added a nice Teespring store with some funny t-shirts, some comical stuff. Support the radio show as best you can. Take a look. Some good stuff there. Some funny stuff. And we hope you like it. If there's something that you want to see in the store, let us know and we'll be happy to accommodate you. That's a project, by the way, with our friends at Less Government More Fun. Check them out at lessgovmorefun.com. All right, I think that's enough with the plugs and stuff. Let's get back to some news from the past week, the week that was. A lot of hubbub this week. Can I say hubbub on the air? Is that allowed? I think most people know it. I know our friends in Florida and Georgia probably know what hubbub is, and probably our friends in the People's Republic of New York do. For the rest of you out there, it means, you know, goings-on and doings in a more of a furious manner. Here I am, mansplaining hubbub. Whatever. Some news from earlier in the week, before the broadcast. The so-called Mueller briefs. Mueller dropped his briefs? No, not exactly. It's more about a legal argument that's being set forth in connection with a report concerning Michael Cohen and what he may or may not have said to prosecutors investigating Russian interference in the 2016 election. Yes, we're still talking about this. Now, I'm not one to explain legal briefs better than other preeminent attorneys out there. I have my own definite opinion, and it just so happens that my opinions mesh with the preeminent Harvard professor and practitioner of over 50 years in the legal field, Professor Alan Dershowitz. Now, I know what you're saying, he's liberal, But he's consistently liberal. He's classically liberal. He has been a defender of in the criminal justice system on the highest of levels for decades. So, me being a civil litigator, I don't know much about criminal practice. I don't have too many criminal clients, knock on wood. So when I turn to things that I don't know, I look at what experts are saying. And Alan Dershowitz, to me, is probably the foremost expert when it comes to issues such as this, I should say. And Professor Dershowitz has been very plain and very clear in what he's saying. He doesn't see any specific violation of federal criminal statute, unless, of course, a prosecutor wants to stretch certain laws that are more nebulous and more vague than you actually think they would be, such as obstruction of justice, and stretch them beyond all sorts of legal recognition. What do we mean by that? Obstruction of justice is one of those crimes where while it's maybe codified and there are elements to it, you kind of know it when you see it. It's one of those catch-alls that prosecutors like to use to get someone into trouble for something that may be not as great as you may think it is. And in this case, Professor Dershowitz is saying that the prosecutorial indiscretion going on here, or maybe the abuse of discretion, or the overstepping of bounds at the very least, is that the Mueller probe and investigation is starting to blur the lines between what is a crime and what Professor Dershowitz is calling a sin. And what's the difference? A crime is something with elements to be fulfilled as prescribed by a statute. It is something with definite things that have to happen and must be provable in order for someone to find on the face of the charges, prima facie, that a crime occurred. A sin is subjective. It's moralistic. It's not something that you can go to jail for, but it's probably frowned upon. It may be unethical. It may be immoral. It may be considered wrong to someone's sensibilities, but it's not a crime. It's not something you prosecute someone over. For instance, Russian collusion, however you may define that, is not a definition used in criminal law. In federal criminal law, there is no crime of collusion. That's a sin in somebody's eyes. So what exactly are we looking for here? We're looking for crimes. We're looking for proof that the Trump administration did some sort of wrongdoing in order to tip the scales in their favor for this election and skew the results. Well, we know the Russians did that, according to every report from every security agency and every investigation that's been going on thus far. In fact, Russians have been charged with it. In fact, Russians are the only ones who have been charged with interference in the elections. Let me just say that one more time. Only Russians have been charged with crimes in connection with the Mueller probe. Everyone else, all the stuff you hear about, all the people quote-unquote convicted or charged that every Democrat is crowing about, had nothing to do with Russian interference or collusion. They had to do with something that either happened before the campaign started or was conceived, like Paul Manafort and his tax evasion and bank fraud, which happened years before he joined the Trump campaign, or their crimes that happened after the campaign, like George Papadopoulos lying to FBI officials. That's what he was charged with, folks. Or they have something that has nothing whatsoever to do with the campaign at all, like Michael Cohen being charged with something to do with taxi cabs. I don't even know what it is, to be perfectly honest with you. That the Mueller probe actually referred to local counsel in the People's Republic of New York City. So clearly it's outside the mandate of the Mueller investigation. So what can be charged against the Trump administration if you find evidence of it? An example that you can give is actually working with WikiLeaks in the hacking that WikiLeaks purportedly did or that Russia gave to them. If the campaign participated with WikiLeaks in the hacking itself and there was evidence to support that, now we're talking about a crime. In the 2 years that we've been looking into this, there's been no such connection. There's been no such evidence. Not even a scintilla, as they say in legal parlance. Not a crumb. Not a shekel. Not a thing that connects Russia, WikiLeaks, and Trump campaign acting in concert and working together. It's all supposition and circumstantial. And when you get into circumstantial evidence, folks, evidence that is not direct to what you want to prove, that's where you are left to read between the lines. And where else but in politics are you left with more room to read in between lines? That's what this is all about. This is becoming more political than anything else. Again, and think about this. We're talking about Trump campaign working with WikiLeaks in Russia in coordination and in concert to such a degree that there's no evidence of them working together and this hacking was successful and it skewed the election. This is the same Donald Trump, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody wants you to think is a moron. They want you to think he's stupid. They want you to think that he couldn't find the White House bathroom with two hands and a flashlight. But yet he is this mastermind of a scheme that is devised to skew a national election involving a foreign power and an anonymous news source known for hacking. Are you kidding me? How does that fit into the narrative of Trump is dumb? It doesn't fit because there's no evidence of it. But let's go into other things that Trump could be accused of being a crime that's really a sin. Stormy Daniels. I know, you're laughing as I said that phrase. Stormy Daniels, she who sued Trump through Michael Avenatti and now owes him $293,000 in legal fees for an improper lawsuit and sanctions against her. Yeah, that Stormy Daniels. The accusation there is that Cohen acted in coordination with and at the direction of President Trump to steer this money to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, who were claiming they had affairs with Trump, in order to keep that information coming out in the 2016 presidential election. Now, prosecutors would argue that this was meant to influence the election, and thus a violation of campaign finance law. This is what Cohen said when he pled guilty. He pled guilty of violating campaign finance laws in relation to these payments. Now, it remains to be seen whether or not this is actually a crime or not, folks, because there's already precedent for this. For those of you who don't know the difference between precedent and statutes and customs and all this legal lingo, precedent would mean that there have been actions like this before and outcomes that can direct us to a similar outcome under similar facts. So in this case, let's see if we all remember a certain Democrat senator named John Edwards and the fact that he had redirected campaign contributions and money to further a lifestyle with a mistress, Riel Hunter, while his wife was dying of cancer. Totally disgusting, absolutely immoral, against all forms of taste and class and beyond the dignity of the offices he was running for. He ran for vice president, he was running for senate again. All of that. Went before a court, went before a jury, was not a crime. As loathsome and disgusting as you may find that to your particular social justice palate, that's not a crime, quote unquote. A campaign finance violation? They happen all the time. I mean, President Obama had to pay $375,000 in fines for campaign finance violations and improper use of money. Those happen all the time, at every level. I remember when I ran for city council, the disclosures and the things I had to do back in 2009 to show that I didn't misuse money. No violations by me, mainly because I had no money. But that's besides the point. There were others out there who put up, you know, signs improperly or spent money improperly or didn't have receipts for things, and they ended up getting fined. Whether or not this was contemplated as part of the campaign or whether this was something that was just as a matter of course done by then-candidate Trump in his private dealings with people. Listen, I don't live in the guy's bedroom. I don't know who's in there from day to day and time to time. It's not for me to say, really. Voters had an opportunity to vote on this issue. They knew about it, clearly, when the voting happened. They knew about, you know, comments that I would not support about where to grab women and his misogynistic ways that he allegedly has. And, you know, he's been called everything from a misogynist to a racist to a bigot to ignorant to low class to all every word under the sun by now. You know them all. And yet he still won anyway. And what I don't understand is how Democrats are still harping on this as being the reason why Donald Trump is president. Donald Trump's president because Hillary Clinton couldn't find the Midwest on a map. Donald Trump is president because Jill Stein blocked Hillary Clinton in a lot of states. I'll say it. And there were Democrats that refused to pull the lever or fill in the oval or punch the Chad for Hillary Clinton. Didn't want to do it for Donald Trump, but it left a plurality of votes for him to win. That's why he won. Had nothing to do with the hundreds of thousands of dollars on Facebook that were vaguely influential, if I would say negligibly influential. I mean, yes, there were attempts by the Russians to, you know, infiltrate campaigns and boards of elections, but that's no different than any other year. Those of us who know about election law and campaigns know that this is a regular occurrence. There is nothing new under the sun about Russia trying to influence our elections. Heck, we tried to influence elections in Great Britain for Brexit. If you remember President Obama opining on whether or not the England and Great Britain, I should really be better at my geography, whether Great Britain should leave the EU. We tried to influence that, wrongfully, I would say. We tried to influence that. Nobody's talking about the Ukraine trying to influence the campaign and help Hillary Clinton. Nobody's talking about Australians coming to work for Bernie Sanders and trying to influence the campaign. All this is documented, by the way, in different reports. Outside influence in elections happen every cycle. It just so happens they're making a hubbub about this one because this one defied the odds, defied results, defied conventional wisdom. And there's so much hand-wringing going on, and there can be no obvious solution, you know, Occam's razor and all that. There can be no obvious solution that the person running was defective and faulty and not popular and didn't run a good campaign. That can't be the reason. The reason must be someone didn't play fair in our own country and got help from all these outside influences and was able to massively pull off the crime of the millennium. Again, Donald Trump, criminal mastermind genius, crime of the millennium. You fill that in.
The show will be right back. But first, a word from Al Sharpton.
But resist, we must. We must.
They're all jitty about a shutdown. The Tortis in the race. Then co-author of Hubris. U2 lead singer Bono. Fran Drescher. Sigourney Weaver. Suspect Jahar Sanayev. Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh. The show Rush Lombard hosts Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Is Mike Muckery yesterday? Antonine Scalia, Kim Kardashian, and the Republican candidates, both Cairo and Benghazi. We rank behind La Vita. First stop, Kazakhstan, to college students in Beijing. He's getting lunch at Chipotle in Iowa. Bain is appropriate. The GOP's tax day giveaway to millionaires. Why was traffic problems email sent? The Environmental Projection Agency. And what sequestration has done.
But wait, there's more.
We all know I've had my share of prompter issues. And here's the president meeting with a colocute. Republicans, Grinches, launching fist full of coal. Copies of the new issue of Charlie Hebdo. He also goes by the name Michael Zeha Biliba. 26-year-old Nina. Phone. Ray Romano. Honored David Letterman. He died of accidental as FEMA, Al-Qaeda in Yemen. The start of school has been postponed several times. Massive manhood is underway. Who spoke at a white supremacist convention? You look at the hand you dealt with, there are not 60 Republicans after a historic, when you hear of ISIS now waterboating, I'm all over the map on immigration. Did the New England Patriots cheat to get into the big game? NFL analyst and Hall of Fame player Troy Aikens, the writer slamming President Obama for talking with YouTube celebrities. What's the latest tonight in Iowa?
Well, in Ottawa.
And they gave this guy a TV show? Let's get back to our show.
Well, folks, we're coming up to the end of the show. I just want to highlight one story that we have currently at www.behindthemylinesradio.us. Go to our front page, and you'll see an article talking about a little ditty about Jack and Martina. Now, what is this? While it's clearly a John Cougar Mellencamp reference, it's a love story, folks. It's a love story around some political intrigue, and go back to our first discussion of immigration. In this particular case, we're talking about legal immigration. Our friend of the show, Jack Buckby, he's been on the show before. He's a bit of a rapscallion. He is a conservative living in Great Britain, in England. And he has been outspoken about Muslim infiltration into the country. He's been outspoken on many conservative issues. He's been accused of being alt-right and right-wing and all this. And he's definitely been outspoken. I mean, the man is out there. He's out there on a lot of things. Well, anyway, Jack fell in love with a girl stateside, Martina Marcota. You may have seen her on some of the Daily Caller videos. You may have seen some of her performance art. She's quite talented, quite smart, quite beautiful. I'm jealous of Jack, but whatever, that's besides the point. You may have seen that this love affair has been going on if you follow some of the stuff that Jack and Martina do. And he wants to come to the country to visit. He wants a visa to come visit. Eventually he wants to come here. They want to get married, have kids, and live happily ever after, living the American dream. But that's not happening right now because for some reason, Jack's visa applications are being held up for over 2 years now in some sort of administrative processing. Now, folks, we've been living in an age with a caravan invading our southern border and illegal immigration run rampant in attempts at illegal immigration. I think the Washington Times says 3,000 border arrests in the past month, something like that. I may be misquoting it, but check out the Washington Times for a reference to that. And yet, someone who's trying to play by the rules, not to come here to live here, to visit, to simply visit, is having issues getting through our legal immigration process. Could it be because we're pulling away resources for illegal immigration management and resources at the border that we can't get through the paperwork? So Jack and Martina have filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, and the Department of Justice to compel the government to process his visa application, which has been languishing for years. Obviously, we fully support him in this effort. Jack may or may not have been put on a list because he's conservative, because he's been outspoken, because he's ruffled some feathers in Great Britain. There is some concern about that. I can tell you right now, Jack Buckby is no more a threat to anyone than, you know, Harry Potter. The man is just the meekest person you'd ever want to meet. Outspoken, yes, but not a threat to a fly. He's a great guy. We'll keep you updated on this story as things progress. But as a final thought, and keeping in the vein of love and relationships, I'm going to break the news on air right now. It's already been broken on social media, but whatever. Congratulations, Russ Gallo and Diana Sepulveda. Russ finally got down on one knee and made the right decision about freaking time. He asked Diana to marry him, and God help her, she said yes. Congratulations to those two crazy kids. Guys, you know I love you and looking forward to all the happiness and joy that may come in your relationship and in your future marriage, which I better get an invitation to, otherwise you're both dead to me. But until then, folks, I want to thank you for listening to the show. I want to thank Gavin Clarkson for coming on. Vote in Buffoon of the Year. Don't forget to do that. Very important. Round two starts right after this show, if you're listening to it on Wednesday evening. If you're listening to it any other time, it's probably start of the ray. So get there and vote. And we're going to do it all again next week. Hopefully with Russ here and we can razz him a little bit about getting engaged. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to shut this sucker down. Again, thanks Gavin Clarkson for coming on the show. Thank you to listening. And until next time, Gene Berardelli behind enemy lines. We are most definitely out of here. Good night, folks.
Our position's been compromised. It's time to roll out. Report for debriefing at www.behindenemylinesradio.us and look for regular communications via Facebook and Twitter at BEL_radio. You are the resistance. Behind Enemy Lines. A Rock Radio production. Back in 7 days. Out.